welcome to the Dawn Newton Podcast. I am your host, Dawn Newton. Not too long ago, I was invited to speak at a storytelling event. A 10-minute story, no notes, and a room full of strangers. I accepted the invitation. I was a bit of a wreck. This would be my first public speaking event, and I am much more comfortable behind a mic in a small broadcast booth or here in my home office, not on a stage, standing in a spotlight in front of a live audience telling a very personal story. I was afraid that I would exceed the 10-minute rule, or I'd forget parts of my story, or that I wouldn't be able to maintain my composure. Fortunately, none of those things happened. The story I told was about a letter my dad wrote to my mom decades before I ever saw it. My story went like this. It's 2016. My adult daughter calls after visiting my mom and she says, "Grandma told me about a letter Grandpa wrote to her begging for forgiveness, begging her not to give up on their marriage." And then my daughter pauses and she says, "And then Grandma said, and your mother knows nothing about it." I'm like, "Wait a minute, what? Wait, say that again?" So Grandma told you that Grandpa wrote a letter begging her to stay, and then she adds, "and your mother knows nothing about it." So I asked my daughter, "Did you see the letter?" "No." "Did she say where it was?" "No." "Do you think she was telling the truth?" "Who knows, Mom? It's Grandma." Well, my mom was right about one thing. If there was a letter, I knew nothing about it. But I also knew better than to ask her about this letter, because if it existed, she'd either lie about it or destroy it. When I was around 8 or 9, my mom started telling me things about my dad, things no child should hear. She told me about his affairs, or as she put it, his chippying around. She said he'd go out for milk and not come back for days. She told me about the time he took off with me, an infant, and my 3-year-old brother. She had no idea where he went. She had to call his superior at the police department asking for help. He'd taken us to his mistress's home. She told me once he bought Christmas presents for her kids. And then there was a story of him coming home after being gone for a few days. Uncle Sonny was with him. Now, Uncle Sonny wasn't my real uncle. He was someone Dad had once sent to prison, and when he got out, he became one of Dad's best friends. Mom told me she confronted Dad in front of Uncle Sonny, and she says that's when Dad took her into their bedroom, threw her on the bed, shook her so hard her curlers fell out, and then he says, "What? You think you have a golden pussy?" I heard about the drinking, broken promises. She told me all of this when I was around 9. I remember just sitting there, confused. I didn't know what to think. I didn't understand or even know the meaning of what she was telling me. I didn't say anything or ask any questions. What's a 9-year-old going to ask? My brain wasn't equipped for this. I do remember that I hated this man. This man hurt my mom. This man made her cry. But I couldn't reconcile this horrible man, this man that hurt her, with the man I knew, my dad. To me, these were two entirely different people. Now, my dad was just my dad. Dad was a police detective, and it was when I was around 5 that he was injured and placed on permanent disability. Growing up, Dad was always home. He'd get me up every morning for school. Breakfast was always on the table. He'd take me to and from school, help me with my school projects. For me, he was always there. I could depend on him. I felt safe. We'd talk about things. We'd argue. He'd always win, but not without a good back and forth. Was he a perfect dad? No. He was damaged and flawed, far from perfect. For me, he was steady, dependable. He was present. He was just my dad. Now, my mom was present too, but in a different way. Mom spent most of her days sitting on the end of the couch, drinking Folgers coffee, smoking her cigarettes, Tarotin 100s, watching her soap operas, One Life to Live, All My Children, General Hospital. And God help you if you interrupted her while her shows were on. She was there. She kept the house together. She cooked meals. Sometimes she would pick me up from school. We didn't do the mother-daughter type things. We mostly spent our time at home playing Yahtzee or gin, watching Saturday Night Wrestling, eating ice cream or popcorn, sometimes both. During my grade school years, I remember waking up late at night to my mom's voice, yelling at Dad, repeating the same thing she had told me, yelling at him about the affairs, about him not being there when her mom died. I could hear her crying and saying how much she missed her mom. There really wasn't a bunch of back and forth between them, so I wouldn't even call it arguing. It was all Mom, and Dad took it. By my teen years, the arguing seemed to subside. The birthday and anniversary cards they gave each other, they were always signed, "Forever yours, all my love, for all eternity." There were hugs, kisses, even holding hands, and I thought, okay, you guys are good. We're good, right? No, Mom never stopped. She would continue to complain about my dad, telling the stories over and over to me, to her female friends. When Dad died in 1998, I spoke at his funeral. She didn't approve. To Mom, that wasn't honoring him. It was betraying her. Not long after Dad's passing, I remember asking her if Dad ever apologized. Did he ever say he was sorry? I'll never forget her response. She made a face and she's like, "Oh God, no. Are you kidding? Your dad apologize?" Fast forward to 2020. Mom has dementia and lung cancer. My brother and I are her guardians. I was at Mom's one day cleaning, organizing things, and I decided to tackle her coffee table. The coffee table was her world. On one end, she kept her cigarettes, Kleenex, aspirin, Imodium AD, Robitussin cough syrup, the remote, the phone, her crossword puzzles. On the other end was a chaotic stack of newspapers, unopened mail, magazines, unpaid bills. And under the table, well, that's where she kept her purse, her Isotoner satin slippers, and the Yellow Pages. The couch, the coffee table, the TV. That was her world. I grabbed the chaotic pile and I moved to the dining room table where there's more space to sort things. And as I'm working through the pile, one piece at a time, a 5 by 7.5 inch tattered piece of paper with Dad's handwriting on it is staring back at me. At the top of the paper was the number 10. There it was. Proof the letter was real. It stopped me in my tracks. Surreal doesn't even begin to describe it. Of all places for it to show itself. I didn't read it right away. I took it out to my car. I wanted it out of her reach, out of her house, somewhere safe. When I came back in, I searched the house for the rest of the pages, but I couldn't find them. I was like, God, you gotta be kidding me. I knew I just couldn't come out and ask her about the letter. I didn't trust her. So she's sitting on the couch watching TV. I'm standing behind her. And I lean on the back of the couch and I say, hey, Mom, I'm going through your papers. Do you have any letters or cards that Dad gave you? Because I'd like to keep those. I want to make sure they don't get thrown out by mistake. And she sits up a little straighter and I can see she's thinking. And then she glances back over her shoulder, took a deep breath and says, well, there's one thing that's very private and very personal to me. And she leans forward, grabs her purse from under the coffee table, sets it on her lap, reaches in, and hands me a tightly folded wad of papers, pages 1 through 9. I don't even know how to describe what I was feeling. Triumph, disbelief, stunned. When I read the letter, all 10 pages for the first time, I was a complete mess for hours. So many emotions, grief, shock, rage, sadness, all at once. I could feel my dad in those words, his voice, his handwriting, his vulnerability, a side of him I wasn't used to seeing. I was missing him, grieving him, all over again. My dad was apologizing, begging her to give him a second chance, promising to change, to be the man she deserved. His guilt filled every page. Remember shortly after my dad's passing when I asked my mom if Dad ever apologized and she said no? She lied to me, manipulated me, weaponized the letter, hid it for decades. The letter was dated March 7th, 1965, 11 days before my first birthday. She kept it hidden for 56 years. And now, here we are, stuck with her dementia, caring for her, knowing she will never own what she did. You know, I never hated my dad. I never thought it, never said it, never felt it. I can't say the same about my mom. And I want to be really clear about something. My dad did shitty things. There's no sugarcoating it. The affairs, the emotional abuse, the chaos he created early in their marriage, those things happened. I'm not excusing any of it. But I was born after that version of him. And the man I knew my entire life, I watched him try to make it up to her. I had a front row seat. And my mom, she never let him off the hook. She never told the full truth. She continued to tear him down, kept the smear campaign going. She used his worst moments like weapons. Against him, against me, against all of us. So here's the part I struggled with in telling this story. Between the man who did harm, but worked to make it right, and the woman who never stopped hurting others, never stopped lying, never tried to heal, who was the horrible person? And I don't ask that lightly. I don't ask it for shock value. I ask it because I lived in the shadow of both their choices. For me, she took away my safety. She made me question my existence, who I was. I still doubt myself today. She wanted me to feel less than, to feel small. She told me things a child should never hear. She made me feel like the other woman in their marriage, like I was betraying her by loving my dad. She manipulated, divided, alienated, controlled, rewrote history. She made me question my own memories, my own worth, my own existence, and none of it was accidental. Being asked to tell a story brought me back to the letter. It wasn't easy to read. And it isn't easy to share. There are so many layers to this story, the healing, the conversations with my brother, the years of piecing myself back together. I'll talk more about those in future episodes. But here's what I've learned. Telling your story out loud matters. Hearing it in your own voice, sometimes for the first time, changes the way it lives inside you. And sharing it with strangers, with an unseen audience, reminds you that you're not alone. The truth deserves to be told, even when it hurts. And if hearing my story gives you the courage to speak yours, then maybe that's where real healing begins. Thank you for listening. Our stories hold power and strength, and I can't wait to hear yours.